Welcome, welcome, welcome to Nodes in the Net, a weekly tangential irreverent conversation that caters to the interests of liminal trickster mystics like you and like Paige. Paige is a member of the Hot Alien Summer Camp community who has a little bit of a proclivity for reading human design charts, and who I talked to in this episode about manifestation, psychology, dog training, and, you know, generally what kinds of things we're setting ourselves up for with the kinds of thoughts that we habitually repeat. And it's a wonderful episode. I had a lot of fun talking to her. I was really grateful to her for getting online with me on a day when I felt that perhaps it might not be feasible to get online, which is interesting because that is the kind of day I'm having today, several weeks later when I'm attempting to actually release the episode. All right, so let's just read a little bit of a Creek Mason Substack essay. This one is called Scraping the Residue Off the Antenna, and it is about kind of the new age concept of enlightenment that I've recently been flirting with. So let's read a little bit of it. Please do head to creekmasons.substack.com and subscribe both to the regular blog and to the recurrent notifications, the emails that you'll get for new Nodes in the Net episodes. I think you're going to enjoy both thoroughly. So let's read a little bit of this and then we'll have a conversation with Paige. Scraping the residue off the antenna requires both effort and surrender. So we've established that enlightenment is more of a posture of receptivity to the universe's eternal loving awareness, rather than, for example, a grace that you earn through overcoming your baser nature. It's not so much about shaming yourself into purity to overcome original sin. It's more about ducking under the smoky haze that obscures an experiential understanding of the true nature of the present moment. It sounds like the way to achieve this awakening would be just to relax into it, kind of duck under the haze, right? It's a paradox. You have to do nothing in order to achieve awakening. Do nothing and achieve in the same sentence create a disharmony in the ear of the average American, and in many cases I've seen the novelty of that discordant note is so alluring that it gets mistaken for ultimate wisdom, but it's not quite that simple. Instead, consider that in order to duck under the smoke, the mental modifications of reality that distort your perception, you have to maintain a certain posture of mind. Practitioners in martial arts, and more than a few movie buffs, will be familiar with horse stance. Legs wider than hip width apart, you squat into a very stable posture. It's what Aang used in The Last Airbender when he was earthbending. It's a tricky stance to hold and requires a good deal of physical strength to rest into for long periods of time. So we do our exercises. We incept a sense of security into our subconscious via visualization and prayer. We return to the breath over and over again. We relax our minds through alternate nostril breathing. We learn to love the darker sides of our personality and transmute lead into gold. Over and over we do these exercises, and yes, our legs are getting stronger from squatting down and thrusting upward to shake off the trauma, conditioning, and ego baggage encumbering us like weighted blankets that make holding horse stance difficult. Our legs get stronger with every squat, and we become more familiar with the truer perspective down below the level of the smoke. But ultimately, what allows us to stay there for longer and longer is that we're simply letting go of extra weights. I've been listening to way too much Ram Dass lately, so I hope you all forgive this extremely woo article. It's a bit less of a bridge than I'm accustomed to traditionally writing about, but I think this is a valuable insight that I've arrived at while listening to his lectures. Enlightenment is a stance of receptivity that some practice might help a person to consistently hold. It's a way of relating to what's already there. It appears it's not a state you achieve. It's a posture you gently sink into. All right, please do read the rest of that essay, even though I've kind of spoiled the ending for you. There's some good build up to it in the first half that I think that you'll really enjoy, especially if you're flirting with the edge of the wooniverse, as they say. So yeah, that's it. The Creek Mason Substack, and so are all the links that you'll need to find today's guest, Paige. And without further ado, here she is. Hello, Paige. Paige. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Nodes in the Net. Thank you for joining me. How are you doing?
Oh, you know, I mean, I'm doing fantastic, but I'm also doing like really crazy bad. And that's just the paradox we live in nowadays.
Yeah, isn't that the case? Like, it's simultaneously the best that anyone has ever been, and also my guts are like molten ice. If that makes sense,
I know that sensation.
Yeah, I think, you know, we almost decided not to record today because we're both kind of going through it anxiety wise, getting a little nervy. And hopefully it's okay that I'm speaking for you in that way.
No, go for it.
Thank you. I think it's useful to be honest about the like fear that, that comes along with being a person who creates in, you know, this like declining dystopia that we find ourselves in, like someone who creates content and things like, I mean, even at a day job, I think that sometimes the fear shows up and tells you like, you know, back off a little bit. Maybe you don't want that promotion. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I have no idea. I'm pretty young. I have no idea if that's a new thing. But I certainly have always struggled with that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I consider myself young too. Certainly like in the world after 9/11, I think everyone has been afraid all the time. There's been, you know, terrorism and pandemics and stuff. But so the question that I wanted to like start us off with in this podcast is this thing that Jessa Reed says all the time, which of course that's how we met. We're mutual fans of the great comedian and new age channeler Jessa Reed. I don't know how she would feel about that introduction, but yeah, shout out always. So there's this thing that she says on her podcast all the time that she can't decide what her energy is going to do. Her energy just kind of like it shows up or it doesn't, and it's this policy of like, you know, being able to like cancel last minute and put everything down in pencil, or maybe not even pencil, like really just hold your plans loosely because the world is collapsing and the energy is turbulent and there's all sorts of astrological weather going on and it's just like crazy out there right now.
So there's a lot of factors going on there, but like, and I always wonder because I've kind of been in Jess's orbit for like a couple years now. And so, you know, and since I kind of entered my, my awakening journey or whatever, like she's kind of been there to provide language to contextualize the experience I was having, you know, which she confesses is, you know, that's one of her great talents. So, you know, but since she's always kind of been there in the field with my spirituality, I have wondered, you know, how, like, it, you know, Jessa has been so vocal about her journey the past couple of years from going from, you know, sticking to plans and stuff into like, oh, if I'm not up for it, my energy is not going to do it, blah, blah, blah. And she's so like the most vehemently vocal person I know about like, if the vibes aren't right, we're canceling. I'm not giving you like a firm, like a firm RSVP unless I know, like until like 15 minutes before, until I know that it's going to work. Otherwise, we're going to have to find another time, you know? And so because she's been so vocal about that, I wonder if I've been influenced by it too. And that's why it's so real to me, you know? And I'm like, are other people kind of maybe non-woo people or whatever having this experience too? And I'm often asking myself, you know, like, is this just like, is this cognitive or whatever, whatever it's like, is this my echo chamber of like spiritual homies who are like filling my reality with this stuff that that's how I'm looking at it, you know, that's why it's showing up all over around me. Or, I kind of miss a piece in there. You know, it's like when you, like, I will talk to non-woo people about my woo experiences. And, you know, I majored in communication, so I love, like, language and words. So I'll kind of, like, be very, very careful about my word choice when I'm talking to non-woo people. And I'll talk about woo concepts to try to get a gauge and take their temperature for if they're having that experience too, if they can relate to it, you know? And so I'll kind of cloak with the spirituality and like just some like regular terminology or like 3D stuff. And then people, you know, by and large, in my experience, the non-woo people in my life and around me seem to be having the same like woo experiences as I am, you know, and as my friends talk about. But, you know, I wonder because you hear that reality is manifested from where your attention goes, and that, you know, a lot of what shows up in your external reality is a mirror for what's going on inside of you, you know? So, like reconciling it, right? It's like, what do you know what I'm saying? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, beautifully said, actually. I totally agree with you. It's nice to hear, because I don't have a lot of connection to the non-woo world, unfortunately. I don't know if I want to say I've burned the bridges, but maybe I've ranted a little bit too manically at some people and put them off a little bit. I think some of my friends might believe that I've like joined a cult and you know, lost touch with reality. But the thing is, is it like, what's the outcome? That's what I always try to refocus on. Like when it comes to whether the beliefs that we share are a result of, you know, amplification in an echo chamber or like, you know, a grounded based description of reality. It really comes down to like, what's the effect? Is it empowering? Or is it disempowering? And that's like, that's kind of the question for me with this whole narrative, because it feels very empowering to just like forgive yourself. You know, I was like 99% of the way to saying that like I didn't want to record today. And it, I don't know, maybe even just like giving myself permission to not record helped me feel like I could. But I wonder, like a long time ago, maybe it was like October 2020, I did this like group sigil exercise with the people on the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Discord. And we were all kind of like new to magic and excited to be together and like exploring the internet in this like liminal trickster mystic space for the first time, because everything was shut down and we were online and finding deeper connections than we'd felt in, you know, forever, right? Is familiar experience to a lot of people, I'm sure. So we did this group sigil exercise, and what we sigilized was what was it? Equanimity in chaos. And the idea was like, there's chaos everywhere. Obviously, there's chaos, and so what we want is when the chaos arises to experience equanimity. But like a couple people I talked to after we sigilized that, and like I burned it in my fireplace, and like we all did it around the same time on the full moon in October. And like I instantly felt this wave of like overpowering just release and calm. But then it was like a couple people I talked to, you know, somebody's roof caved in. Somebody like lost a tooth. Whoa. You know, like crazy things happened. So I started to wonder like, and this is what I'm wondering too about this like self-forgiveness exercise of saying I can't decide where my energy goes, is like, am I manifesting? Cause I felt equanimous when the chaos arose, but did I also create the chaos, or was the chaos going to happen anyway? Or it just seems very tangled and almost impossible to untangle.
Oh man. Yeah, there's so much going on there. Oh, yeah, so Oh my God, where do I start? Well, I mean, the chaos, it's kind of like undeniable, right? It's like, you know, whether it's caused by what we're doing or not, it's there. And it's not like we can get rid of it. And I'm not saying that there's a prerogative to get rid of the chaos, but since it's there, then, you know, it's that classic sentiment of like, well, that's the lemons life gave you. So like, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to respond and react to it? So yeah. And that's kind of what we were touching on before we started recording is like, I'm struggling with my wording here. Like when you are trying to live in this flow state, right? You're trying to find ways to maximize the efficiency of your energy and minimize some of the like hapless habitual loops or whatever that you do. And so you're trying to live from that place. And we're kind of, you know, we have some conception that reality is changing and reality has changed. We don't, you know, we can't necessarily agree if it's because of COVID or it's because of like quantum reality or if it's because of the age of Pisces or ending or like, you know, any number of factors or whatever. Like, we don't know why it's happening, but it's there. Anyway, so then when we're going out into the world and we feel this sense of like, I don't want to do it. I want to go. Nope. You know, and you feel that contraction happen. And you're trying to live in this flow state. So you're like, okay, is that my body telling me no? Is that my body saying, let's not do this today? Or is this, you know, like some kind of fear-based reaction thing that I'm going through? Just like that I kind of need to gentle parent myself through it and encourage myself, you know, and, you know, it's the question of like, you know, if I cancel plans because the vibe isn't right, the whole sentiment of that makes a lot of sense to me. But then in practice, once I start doing it, and this is my experience, I've been wondering, am I creating like a loop spiral of its own here where I'm rewarding the behavior of avoidance? You know, I'm avoiding, right? My body gives me this reaction and I'm like, oh, okay, body, I'll listen to you. And I'm going to cancel it. I'm going to reschedule it. I'm going to not do it, whatever. You know, like, I wonder if I'm kind of enabling myself so that whenever I feel discomfort, like it's a comfort reflex, you know, or if I'm just learning to integrate the new energy.
That's beautiful. That's like such a psychologically sound interpretation of it, which I feels really liminal to me. The story that comes to mind from that is my dog. When I go to the dog park, there's this long path from where you park to where you like get in. And once the dog gets inside, she's fucking the happiest dog to be there, you know, like, and she's taking turns with the other dog. She's playing, you know, appropriately and like politely in like dog land, you know, which like I'm really grateful for. I don't know how I would have like socialized her to do that on purpose. It just came up because we loved going to the dog park. But this path on the way to the dog park, if there is anyone on it, a bicyclist, a kid walking home from school, another dog, she goes apeshit. And the way that I tried to solve it originally was like, I'll direct her away from the thing that's got her like intense energy, you know, fixated on it. And I had this sense that like, you know, she's just really excited to be at the dog park. And so she's like, she kind of has like barrier frustration. She wants to like bark at everyone to say like, pet me, love me, play with me. Right. And so she's got like all this really intense energy. But I think that what I did is she would bark and then I'd give her a treat and like, you know, get her to make eye contact with me and focus on me and avoid, you know, continuing to bark and like just going crazy on whoever is walking by. But I feel like what I've rewarded is that initial bark. So now it almost feels more consistent that I've like created this neural pathway for her via like dopamine triggers with treats that like when she sees someone, she barks and then she like bolts over to me and she like barks really crazy and then bolts over to me and sits down like, and looks up at me like, I did it. I did the thing you like.
Dude, I think dogs are a great example for kind of how training your subconscious is, because they, you know, they aren't always going to get the intended message. There's this whole thing in communication, mm-hmm. like sociology, where, you know, the process of communication, we're going to break it down really boring for a sec. There's an encoder who creates the message. There's the message, and then there's the decoder, you know, and this the message obviously undergoes this. It's like the game of telephone. It undergoes a transformation oftentimes, more often than we care to admit, between when it was encoded by the encoder of the message and then the message that was decoded by the decoder on the other side. Like it can be totally different than what was intended, and it can be so easy, like same exact wording, same exact whatever, like just different connotative understandings and extrapolations from personal experiences of, you know, your unique perspective, blah, 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 communication. But dogs, dogs learn, that, you know, that they're so focused on your body language. So like little movements that you make, they're attuned to these things and they're trying to create patterns. They're not trying to do it. It's just the mechanism. Inherently, the dog wants to communicate with its person and be understood. And so the dog is going to absorb environmental information, you know, about like what you're doing with your hands and blah, blah, blah. And it's not a conscious process, but the dog is going to extrapolate messages from your behavior about like what's good, what's bad, what you want from them, like what you don't want from them, and like cause and effect. Because really, it's, you know, it's obviously for dogs, it's not about good, bad, whatever. It's about cause and effect. When this thing happens, it causes this other thing to happen. And that's where we learn to like expect it. But point is, right, like your story is the perfect example of how a lot of dog training goes and training your subconscious mind similarly. You trigger, you're rewarding a behavior, and the dog has a different understanding of what behavior is being rewarded. Your dog thinks that, you know, when when she barks and like pursues other animals and whatever else, like that's what she thinks you're rewarding, you know? And so now that's a pattern, and it's so much harder to unwrite these things than it was to like plug them in the first place. So, you know, if anybody's ever had a dog, tried to train it, you know, for me, it's been a great journey to dive into dog communication, dog psychology, because it's very different than what humans tend to project onto dogs of like what they're thinking, what they're doing, what these behaviors mean, blah, blah, blah. But a dog is a lot like your subconscious mind. And, you know, you really do have to learn to speak the same language as it and be attuned to some of those micro transactions that might be going on where, I'm already forgetting the other example, but when something shows up in reality, maybe it's gone. When something shows up in your reality and it triggers a subconscious reaction or whatever, like that, God, I big ideas, well, small
the
words.
Original
I'm sorry.
Example. No. It's totally cool. I mean, fucking brain fog. We've all got long COVID. Don't worry about that at all. I also I like a little bit of breathing room in my podcasts. You know, if people are talking nonstop, then it's almost like lifting weights.
Oh yeah, the silence isn't my problem as much as just like what it's feeling like over here, man. Because it's sometimes I feel like I'm like looking up at all my thoughts because it's like a mountain in front of me, and I'm like, how can I synthesize all of this information into a sentence? And then I get stuck. So, thank you, thank you for understanding.
Yeah,
I'm sure as a fellow intellectual, like you have an experience that you can resonate with that.
Oh, no, never.
No,
me? No. But the original example that we were using was, I think it was kind of the way that you phrased, like training your body to on like being rewarded by the avoidance pattern, that like you're kind of giving the avoidance what it wants, and then the avoidance maybe shows up more often as a result. Yeah. I think that's what sparked me to tell
that
story. That
is another thing about dogs too. You know, you're describing the story took a different direction than I was expecting it to from the beginning. Cause you started talking about how you wanted to, you know, put distance between your dog and the trigger, just try to put some space between it, have some avoidance there so that, you know, there's, maybe that will lessen the reaction. But you know, with dogs, most of the time you need to do like exposure therapy with the things that they're most triggered by. Like there has to be like a safe space where they can be exposed to these things without any harm coming from it. And then like have that experience repeated over time until like they're more comfortable with it. Cause truly for dogs, when they're lashing out, barking, when they're, God, I can rant about dogs for a while because there's so many things that people think, they think are signs that dogs are happy when dogs are just actually really fucking stressed out. Yeah. And so people are like, oh my God, look at the happy boy. Blah, blah, blah. And the dog is like freaking out. Because the signals from the humans are so confusing and stuff. Anyway, point being, when dogs react to things, most of the time it's like a fear reaction. Most of the time, you know, the dog doesn't have malicious intent towards you at all. Like the dog is afraid, and the dog is putting up a protective mechanism that has been honed by years of evolution or whatever. So, you know, when we kind of come to the middle, like okay, I see those big feelings over there, and I'm over here, so I'm gonna get a little closer, and I'm gonna coexist with these big feelings, and you know, and like expand my sense of comfort by doing so. And, you know, that's the essence of exposure therapy. And that's also, you know, that's what we need to do. Well, I'm not one to tell anybody what they need to do. But that's what a lot of shadow work and like reprogramming your mind and things like that, or like healing your body. I feel like that's a lot of what it is. Meditation, like you're just bringing yourself like a little closer to like coexist with that big sensation, and then over time through that practice, like we find growth and expansion. And in avoiding, like nowadays, like well, and here's the thing about the avoidance question from originally, like you make plans, you don't want to go, you cancel, and you're like, I'm honoring my like body or whatever, right? And my contention with that is obviously, what if that's like self-harmful? What if that's like a new bad habit of like limiting yourself or whatever, quote unquote bad, whatever. Oh God, no, no, come back, come back.
You derailed it by calling yourself bad.
Well, that's exactly nobody what wants happened. To... Now I'm running some reprogramming there. Oh man. See, no, this is what we're not doing. This is the Mercury retrograde shit. I wonder, do you have any idea what I was saying, man?
Do I have any idea? I had like kicked my feet up and was letting the current take me. I think that where you were going was towards like what we've been building toward, in my opinion, is permission to ourselves to continue listening to the vibe.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. And then let me play devil's advocate with that, because this is actually, I love this, because contrarily where I was going is to say, you know, I have swung this pendulum very much towards, I'm going to fully listen to my body. I'm going to like honor all of the sensations that come up. I'm here for it. I'm totally like present listening. And then some of these scenarios, right? Like where I think, or I thought that I was honoring my body, by, not engaging with something or by choosing rest over adventure in whatever sense that shows up as, usually social encounters. You know, for as any good scientist does, sometimes I do that. And sometimes I'm like, okay, I feel this like dread, this feeling. I don't really want to go. I think it might be my body telling me to listen, to rest today. But in the interest of science, I'm going to still go and I'm going to see if I was right. I'm going to see if this feeling was a hunch, a gut feeling that is rooted in intuition and my body's true sensations. And I go and I have a fucking great time. And the second I get there, all of the bad feelings are like gone because I'm in a new place. I'm present in a new context and I'm at ease. I'm out of my comfort zone. But it doesn't matter anymore because I'm here, you know? And so I'm like, how do I, you know, it's not always an easy, like, I think I'm pretty in touch with my intuition, but it's not always easy to tell, is this my body speaking to me, telling like, and I need to give myself permission to listen to it, or is this some kind of either subconscious old programming reaction, or just some kind of current fear situation that's like trying to keep me safe in my comfort zone. Like, it's, you know, when do I push past it in the interest of what's on the other side? And when do I just salute the body and like, I'll do whatever you say, boss. You know, I think, I don't know if it's that easy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, it could even be like the gut parasites are telling me that I shouldn't record a podcast, you know what I mean? And that like icky anxiety feeling I literally feel in my like diaphragm area is my large intestine fighting off the parasites or something. I don't know. Maybe it's gas.
Oh, I like but, the like, parasite theory. That's interesting.
Yeah, or it could be like you're saying, like parasites of the mimetic sort, like a programming, you know, a shard of programming that's still lodged in you from an upbringing that wasn't ideal, or from a trauma that you experienced, or anything like that. So, yeah, like sort of figuring out how to tease apart. I think that it's possible if you're like really practiced and you listen all the time, I think that it's possible to start recognizing when that inner voice is ego or programming or, you know, something kind of faulty or false, versus when it's something that's like, you know, this is the higher self talking, or this is the wisdom of my body trying to protect me, or maybe the wisdom of my body trying to refocus me so that I can propel even farther in a different direction, or what have you.
Well, but like,
yeah.
Oh no. I need to turn you. Off. Like, what is going on? I think it's this light. I don't know. We'll find out. No. Because I forgot what you were talking about too. I interrupted you. No, this is a good idea. Recording during retrograde is still a good idea, guys. You gotta sometimes move through the energy. Okay, what I was gonna say is, what? You can't necessarily know until you go through experience, though. You know, like the only way for me to tell, is this intuition of my body, or is this like, you know, something that I don't need? The only way for me to know is to conduct my science experiment, where sometimes I went and sometimes I stayed, you know? And so, like, especially like when I feel like new energies come online or whatever, however you contextualize that, like when you feel something new, like you gotta like experiment and play with it before you're even gonna know. So, you know, like it's okay to, well, as always, it's okay to be wrong.
Yeah. It is okay to be wrong. You know, what are the stakes really if you listen to your body and you turn out to be wrong, or if you don't listen to your body and you turn out to be wrong? Ultimately, as long as you're learning, you're doing what you incarnated to do, right? Like, ultimately, it feels good right now. Like, this conversation, I'm glad we're having it. I feel like, in a way, the reason I think I keep pushing toward this idea of like, it's okay to listen to your body is actually, well, I guess it's sort of counter to the experience that I'm having, which is like, you know, we talked right before we got on mic about alchemizing the iciness in order to, you know, like transmute it into something, I don't know, cool. It's like a good conversation and an interesting bit of introspection and an interesting bit of examination of the like experience of living in this declining dystopia. And I think that we've really unpacked a lot of interesting things. I've been wanting to talk about that like dog training experience that I've had for a really long time. And I'm grateful to you. You know, I'm like, we're recording in retrograde or whatever, but the fact that you were able to like hold space for me to come on, even though I was like fully like dissociated and like derealized, like I was looking at my fingers and wondering why I've never seen them fing, you know, like that. The fact that feeling has passed, I think, is a testament to the science experiment that you're advocating. Like, sometimes you gotta dive into the suck. You gotta brush off the outer layer of dirt on the big lump of coal that you were just handed, and maybe there's gold underneath. You know?
Well, and it's an important, I think it's an important place to put our energy, right? Is like, just always, and this has been a theme for me the past couple years. It might be because I've been in my year of the tower this year.
Ooh.
I keep screaming. But get comfortable being uncomfortable. Okay? And bear with me here, because it's not the like traditional sense of like grind, capitalism, like bootstraps, whatever. Like it's like just be there with it. It's like really, like we really have to be aware of where we're running away from, just like feeling stuff that's there, right? And it's like, because that shows up in, like, at least for me, so many like sneaky ways. So just putting our attention on like how is my inherent need for comfort and security playing into the situation, right? Because like so much of the time, it just like needs to be acknowledged. Same thing with fear. Again, my experience, so much of the time, if I'm just like, oh, yes, like a sensation's overwhelming, a fear is overwhelming. And then you say, yes, I am afraid of that. I am afraid of like, I am maybe a little insecure right now. I am feeling blah, blah, blah. Like, and then that feeling is like, takes a deep breath and it's like, oh, cool. And then it kind of like sits down a little bit, like, so that you can get a better view on things. But yeah, like discomfort is inevitable. And we are very conditioned in the society we live in to give in to the seeking of comfort. Like, consumerism is all about like luxury and comfort. Like, and this is part of the conversation of we're simultaneously in the highest highs and the lowest lows at the same time. Like, we're living a more luxurious life in many senses than anybody in the past. And yet, you know, there's so many new unprecedented problems.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, ultimately, I think a lot of wellness practices come down to discomfort. Like, everything about like learning skills and discipline and growth comes down to like, you have to put yourself out in the icy water for a little bit, like, you know, and then we can come back and defrost it. But like, personally, for me, comfort is a mental worm that's like always trying to steer me, like always trying to steer me, period. Like, I always want to be comfortable. Like, if my clothes, I mean, you know, whatever, neurodivergence, whatever, like, if my clothes have like a snag in them, then I'm like miserable. And like, if it's too hot or too cold or whatever. And I think about it a lot, because even, you know, those are just the physical things, let alone the mental gymnastics that we do to keep ourselves mentally comfortable, cognitive dissonance and the works, you know, like, it's just really, really important to put your attention there to the capacity that you can, because I think the comfort discomfort dialectical tension is such a jam-packed land. What is it called? Like, it's like a mine. It's a mine just full of like self-growth potential.
Yeah. It's giving Fight Club, you know? Like, that was sort of the message of Fight Club, is we live in like an anesthetized an addict society where we're trying to, you know, fill the void in our lives with little comforts and luxuries and things. But there's statistically, the countries with the highest GDP are also, it's like a direct, you know, correlation. The countries with the highest, you know, wealth are the ones that have the most mental illness. And
more money, more problems.
And it's like, you know, it's
more money, more problems.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Literally, and it's despair and depression and anxiety and, you know, all sorts of other neurodiversions. You know, I'm bipolar personally. I think that that's very much influenced by the culture of like comfort seeking that we live in. It's like I kind of already called it this, but it's like an alcoholic culture. You know, people came back from World War I and they were horribly shell-shocked, and they, you know, didn't know how to cope with it because psychology was like brand new and nobody had the tools to do the self-work yet. And there was no possibility for healing. And so people were like nonverbal and shell-shocked, and they raised kids, and the epigenetics, you know, got passed on, and the styles of parenting, you know, evolved as a result of like reactions to this like core wound of seeing like 80% of your generation gunned down in machine gun fire that they were like forced at gunpoint to run directly towards. You know, can you imagine how traumatizing that would be for an entire planet? You know, the whole planet went
real
through that.
Real. And so then they're supposed to act normal.
They come back and they Right. We're supposed to like go back to, you know, the ideas of like morality and hero worship and all that, you know, the stuff, the like messages of the modern age and like, you know, structure and all that, institution and honor and all that good stuff. Like, you know, it's good to be a contributing member of society and all this. And slowly over time, that's been degrading and degrading and degrading. And, you know, what these people like turned to, I think predominantly was, you know, anesthetizing the pain. Like, it was way too much pain for them to face. And so the culture became rife with alcoholism. Like, I think at one point people were drinking like 40 handles of whiskey a month or something like that. Like, Jesus. Each individual, which is like not something anyone should quote me on because it's kind of like half remembered. But I feel like I remember it being a ridiculous number like that. And then like they tried to do the prohibition thing and everybody just like created organized crime, whatever. History lessons are boring. The point is, maybe not to everyone, but I have trouble focusing on them, which is why I'm explaining it so poorly. But the point is, now we live in a culture where literally everyone is either in recovery or relapse at any given moment. And it might be, you know, they got addicted to Twitter again and they just deleted it off their phone and they're, you know, starting to realize the birds are still singing in real life, you know, the actual birds are singing. Or maybe they just, you know, relapsed into, you know, binge eating Snickers bars or whatever, you know.
We have like, it all. Good luck. Abstaining.
It's infinitely available. Right. And so that's the message of Fight Club, to bring it all back. Like, his, you know, Chuck Palahniuk's, I think, moral of that story, although that could be argued, but like one of the main things that I took away as a kid who became obsessed with that movie was that we were trying to like fill this like hole where God was, you know, taken from us by this atrocity and trauma, and fill it with like duvets and cute little coffee tables in the shape of yin yangs and things like that. And so the idea is like, let's experience pain. Let's lean in instead to what like discomfort is, and like literally punch each other senseless, you know? Like, that's the message of Fight Club, is like reclaim your I guess like Nietzschean, you know, grow yourself through experiencing pain and become the person that you are meant to be, and tear down this pointless society that we're living in. You know, that's kind of, I guess, a little bit what your what you were saying reminded me of.
Yeah, dude. I'm a repeat offender of being uncultured, and I still haven't seen Fight Club, I'm not gonna lie, but you're really selling it. I want to it now. I just know we don't talk about it. That's all I know.
Yeah, right. It's the first two rules. I've broken them, I suppose.
No, but yeah, absolutely. Can I pull on this thread? Or I guess, you know, we have a pivot here. Do you want to hear me talk about kind of crazy neurodivergent theories? Or do we want to talk human design a little bit?
That's a good question. So as I was talking, I drew tarot in the Creek Mason Discord to figure out what we should do with our you know, final half of this podcast, because I could recognize that I was talking too much.
Stop. No, it's your podcast. So, man, shut up. Shut up.
I think people listen to a podcast for the guest, so I want to give you an opportunity to decide for yourself in this choose your own adventure which direction we go. But the prompt that the tarot is giving us is the Three of Wands, which is like a sort of armored and robed guy facing away from the camera, looking at a couple ships sailing down a channel. And he's got, you know, two wands planted in the ground behind him and a third in his hand. And I don't know, you read tarot, right? Do you have any association?
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's tough. I'm also factoring in earlier, I pulled the Page of Wands for the podcast.
Ooh. I should have let you do it.
Yeah. So those are both wands. And, you know, mm-hmm. that I would definitely interpret as, you know, you're, you know, using your gifts of expression and like your talents of expression, you know, that's what fire, the fire suit codes for me. And then especially like the, you know, the page is your, a new idea is forming in your mind and maybe you're not taking it anywhere yet, but you're playing with a brand new idea. And then the three would be like, you're setting out on a new journey, you know, like he's about to leave. Yeah. He's got his two wands in the past and he's taken just the one he needs over into the unknown. So, in the context of this though, I mean, I'm having trouble seeing, I think I'm feeling intuitively human design because tarot has been talking to me a lot about human design through wands, fire. So maybe we'll roll with that.
I love it. Yes. It's a new idea for me. I mean, human design is maybe before we like dive super into it, if you could give like a, I don't know, my understanding is it was like channeled by somebody in the 80s or something. 90s. And it's basically a new form of astrology.
Late 80s, early 90s, I think. Yeah, I need to double check exactly. Let me see if I can do that. You can still hear me right now, right? Okay.
Yes.
So it was channeled in the 90s. I don't remember exactly by who, but it combines astrology, the I Ching, Kabbalah, and Vedic philosophy, and then like the chakra systems and like all this stuff. So it's weaving a whole bunch mm-hmm. of different like kind of Eastern disciplines into like one cohesive system. And the purpose of the system, I guess I forgot to mention gene keys and stuff too. Like the human design chart is based on, it's based on like genes. There's 64 gates, just like there's 64 genes, if I remember correctly. human design essentially gives you this body graph that shows you your energetic centers. And then like how it's, I'm borrowing this roughly from P, I believe P the fairy. It's an energetic blueprint for how your body, your energy was meant to move through the world in this life. It's an energetic blueprint of how your energy works. And it shows you, you know, where you're going to find, there's a huge sense in human design of being in alignment, quote unquote, versus like not in alignment. And it's basically just like in this moment, are you aligned, with the way your energy is intended to flow, or are you experiencing resistance because you're in your not self? That's for starters.
Yeah, that's really cool. One of the things that JT and I were just talking about like 2 days ago or whatever is this idea that where astrology is kind of prescriptive, like you get your horoscope for the day and it's like, you're gonna have these experiences and these, you know, fateful occurrences will befall you and stuff like that. Sometimes, I don't know, maybe that's bad astrology, but like compared to that, which I've been exposed to, human design has this really nice empowering feel to it that is like totally different, where instead of feeling like I'm predestined to live a certain life because I was born on a certain day, it's more that there's like a ideal way for me to show up in the world. And I, by leaning into it, I can feel more aligned with, you know, my purpose for incarnating, and I can feel more, more myself. Mm-hmm. Like one of the bizarre things about human design is like a lot of people that I've seen look at their chart for the first time, they have this experience of being like, oh, this actually describes me perfectly. This is how I like to be. I'm not always exactly like this, but it is what I would prefer.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's definitely been my experience with human design. Human design is rarely going to tear you down. It's all about empowering you to use your energy in a more efficient way. It's like cut the fluff. Let's get to your destiny, girl. Like, we're getting into it. Like, there's a lot of different aspects of human design. You know, like I said, there's the chart, which is where all of the infographic information would be derived from. But there is a personality type, which, or I guess I should say, there's a first year type, you know, that which there are generators, which make up most of the world. They're like the battery, the projectors, who are like kind of energetic guides, and then manifestors and reflectors. And then there are personality lines, and there's two lines. One is like how you see yourself. The other one is how the external world sees you. And then there's this onslaught of different things, like your specific gifts based on which gates in your chart are filled out. It tells you how you digest, which goes for how you digest food most optimally, to how you digest information most optimally, and environment, like what kind of environment do you thrive in, and, you know, yada, yada. But one thing that I'm always most interested in is the incarnation cross, because, girl, your incarnation cross is like the easiest cheat code to living your destiny. And like, people don't know about it, dude. Your incarnation cross is your life's purpose. It's what your body wants to do with itself naturally, you know?
Yeah, this is, I'm overjoyed that you took it here, because like, I've listened now to a couple of human design introduction type podcasts and stuff, and people talk a lot about like whether you're a generator or a projector or these things. So I feel like I have a good handle on that, and people can find that all over the place. But I've noticed that when you're giving readings, I want to call them that. I want to speak that into the field. Like, you give readings on the Hot Alien Summer Camp Discord from time to time, and you really zero in on this incarnation cross piece. And so I was hoping that we could dive into that and learn. I'd love to learn more about
that. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I know that we did talk about your personal chart, and I would need to pull that up again to like really remember exactly what we discovered, but hang on. But absolutely. So the incarnation cross is my favorite thing, because in my opinion, it's the thing that everybody just already deserves to know about themselves. You just deserve to know, man. You really do. Like, you know, I've spent my whole life, all 23 years of it, like looking for someone to just give me like real answers. I'm like, okay, for real level with me, like, what's actually going on here? Does anybody have any actual guidelines for like what works in life and what doesn't, or whatever? Which, you know, obviously that's flawed thinking. Flawed thinking.
We're inventing words. We're very progressive here.
Think. I'm stuck on that. What can we? Okay. Blah blah blah. What was I saying?
Flawed thinking.
Where was I? I don't think where I was going really matters, but yeah, your incarnation cross for sure. So, and it's one of those things, like a lot of aspects of your chart, you're going to be able to find a lot of friends who have similar things, and you're going to be able to talk to them and relate on these things. Your incarnation cross is pretty specialized. Like, there's a lot of them, and it's based on like these certain, two certain gates that you have defined. And if you have a certain two gates defined, it's like a certain pattern. It indicates a pattern, which is where you get the incarnation cross from. And, you know, so they're very different from each other too. Like, I mean, sometimes when I tell people their incarnation cross, they're like, oh, really? That's it? Because they're just like, they already kind of know that about themselves in some way. They just don't realize how important it is to their life and to their like happiness, right? And again, human design, it's all about like building you up. It's not like you need this or else like you're going to, your life is going to suck if you don't do it this way or whatever. Like that's not the tone of it at all. but yeah, some incarnation crosses, very, very exciting. Some incarnation crosses, people are like, what? That's it? It's really interesting.
I just sent you my chart if you want to demonstrate your knowledge. I also see, I think in your Discord profile, you're a left angle cross of identification. Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's a good place to start.
So we can go in either of those directions if you want.
Oh, I'm sorry. I talked over you.
No worries. I was just saying exactly what you said. Let's start in either of those places.
For sure. So left angle cross. This is a good guideline to begin to understand your incarnation cross. And also, you know, a disclaimer, like human design is still pretty new. I've been really thrilled to see over the last couple years, a lot more free or cheap human design resources coming online. But a lot of it, you know, when I do readings, like I do have a couple tools that work for me, but I piecemeal this stuff together. Like I will look up somebody's incarnation cross and then look at a few different websites and get some overall takeaways and see what resonates the most. And then, you know, I might do that for like several different aspects of a chart. Like it's, you know, there is not a ton of free information out there, but it's worth it to go like explore, because you can find things on your own. You just copy paste what's on your chart into Google and you will get some results that'll help you learn more about it. But nice. Human design, left angle cross, right angle cross. That obviously those are the directions. You either have a left angle cross, which means that your destiny is centered around being in service to others. And a right angle cross indicates that you incarnated in this life for your own soul's growth. Your destiny is centered around you. Your destiny is not centered around what service you bring to others per se. Now, your destiny might involve that, but the purpose for incarnating is for you to be here in service of yourself, versus a left angle cross is here to make an impact on the other souls around them. So it's a good place to start. And then you have a lot of different stuff going on there. For example, I have the left angle cross of identification. That is basically, I am meant to bring together people who believe in similar shit that I do. I'm meant to create a menagerie or like a collection of people, like a community who resonate with the same ideals that I do. So, yeah.
Oh, sick. You're right on. You're
in
the right place.
I know. And yeah. And I definitely have experienced that firsthand where, it sort of had already begun to align for me before I realized human design was a thing and I learned about my incarnation cross, but I have experienced firsthand where you kind of, when you put yourself in the right environment, for your incarnation cross to shine, it will, you'll feel a difference. Like the work, if you feel like your energy is like allergic to doing stuff, you know, like in your daily life, it does help with that. Like human design is huge for that, because you put yourself in mentalities, paradigms, situations, where you feel supported by the moment. And your energy is compatible with what's going on. So when I put myself in this community, I do a lot of quote unquote work, but none of it feels like work at all. Right? It's that cliche thing. It doesn't feel like work because it feels meaningful. I like it. It's aligned.
It's what you'd be doing anyway. Yeah.
So yeah, for sure. What else should we talk about here with incarnation crosses?
Well, I'm a right angle cross, I'm noticing.
Oh yeah.
Of
oh yeah, wait, that was what I was doing. Let me see if I've got you in here.
Which is, I don't know if I, maybe I want to like moralize this or something and be like, I'm not here to live for myself. Maybe living for myself involves living for other people. And I'm supposed to develop myself through understanding better how to be of service. You know what I mean? Like, but maybe I shouldn't be so so quick to snap to judgment about, like, you know, what's traditionally in our culture considered like virtuous versus you know, what's actually meant by like living an incarnation for yourself versus for the collective.
Yeah, it's definitely sticky there, because a lot of the time you know, in an other focused destiny might show up as, I'm getting really crossed in my left and rights here. Left angle crosses find fulfillment through service to others, right? But sometimes that, depending on your other stuff, that service to others might come through your own vibrance. You know, I've read people who whose chart is like, hey, man, when you're doing well, everyone does well. Like, just focus on making yourself happy. And then that emanates, it radiates out from you into wellness for everybody around you. You know, so you might have a left angle cross. And I wish I had the exact terminology here for the which crosses would be appropriate here. But you might have a left angle cross, but your destiny is about like cultivating a sense of wellness within you, because that is bringing, like, that is serving. You're serving the public somehow by doing that. Or you might be a right angle cross and you are incarnated here for your own soul's growth. But maybe what you're passionate about is tied to service. You know, simple as that.
Yeah. Okay.
Simple as mud, clear as mud.
Yeah. Right. Especially, you know, I'm a projector. So like, I feel like my energy has to come through lifting other people up, right? Is kind of what's meant there. But at the same time, I'm here to, how did you phrase it? To explore, like, my reason for incarnating is as a right angle cross person.
Well, it's for your own soul's growth. It's for you. Essence, it's selfish. You're not here for the impact you have on others. You're here for the impact that you have on you. How others are affected by that is not as relevant to you.
Wow.
Yeah. Your incarnation cross is really, yeah, you, I mean, if I remember correctly, you have the whole easy breezy genius profile line situation.
Yeah, that is what it says. What a funny name.
Yeah. And your incarnation cross is, it's very philosophical, you know, it's like, it's the gates 43, 23, 4, and 49. And I won't dive into all of what that means. But you have a natural voice for the liminal. You have a natural voice to bring complex ideas that are like maybe just at the peripheral of understanding into the conversation. And you doing that really charges like others. And it's a very powerful spark in terms of teamwork. And I remember my takeaway from reading your chart being like, yep, you're in the right place too. Like, everything you're doing with Creek Masons is I think what your energy wants to do.
Wow. Yeah, we gotta dive into this more. Like, maybe I'll, after the holidays and I've saved up some money, maybe I'll pay you. Is that something that people can do? I've got to probably close up here, but and my dog is barking like crazy. Probably.
Oh, because, I can vaguely hear.
I think the food might have arrived.
Oh, yum.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
sorry.
No,
to cut
let's
you
get
off.
Back together and so talk abruptly. Human design for sure. I am just getting to this point where I'm about to open up some offerings. You know, I do tarot. I do problem solving tarot really well. Like, let's really dig into something you're stuck in. And then human design charts. You know, I'm not a certified professional. I'm not, you know, an expert by any means, but I do really enjoy walking people through the beginner elements of your chart, and or if you're trying to dig into some of the more complex parts of it, like the gates and stuff, if you're trying to see trying to find ways to implement those ideas more, I would love to help. That's absolutely something that I do. And if you catch me, well, probably not if you're hearing this, but if you catch me soon, then I'll do it for free because I haven't solidified my offerings yet. I really enjoy human design. I think it's a very powerful tool, and I think getting the word out about it, very important.
Well, thanks so much for following me down the sort of like alchemical discussion of what we were manifesting through following our fear. I think if nothing else, it demonstrates your intelligence and emotional intelligence and understanding of kind of psychology and sociology. I think that makes you the perfect person to help people with this very, I mean, if you, you can get your chart at like myhumandesign.com. And I recommend people do that for sure. And then once you get it, take a look at the 20,000 things that it's going to tell you about your personality and recognize the need to reach out to Paige and get some help deciphering it, because you really did explain just in the brief passing conversation that we've already had online and on air just now, you've explained a lot of stuff that I was curious about in a very easy to understand and helpful way. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you everybody for bearing with my retrograde loop trigger, which is forgetting where I was in the story I was telling. In the whole journey of, you know, reprogramming the subconscious into a group, growed, evolved version of you, of me, I have really taught myself the reflex to come back to where I was and what I was saying if I'm distracted. But sometimes in times like Mercury retrograde, it comes back, the experience of, oh, I just walked myself out into the middle of a tangent and then forgot where I am or what I'm doing. It comes back, and we saw that here today. So thank you for bearing with me on that. And I'm really glad that we decided to have this conversation. Thanks for having
me. Thank you for your vulnerability, your honesty, your insight, your wizardry with human design. I'm very excited that we decided to have this conversation after all.
Yeah, so if y'all want to find me, not that you would need to for any reason, but hey, excuse to plug summer camp. We have a Discord server called Hot Alien Summer Camp. It's trustingly open to the public. Please drop in. Jeff, if you could help the people get connected with camp, that's where we get real metaphysical. And if you're looking for a community, we'd be happy to send some big hugs over to you. Come by and chat with us.
Yes. Help Paige fulfill her left angle cross and go join the Hot Alien Summer Camp Discord.
Yeah. And it's not, awesome. Not in a weird recruitment way. I just like, you know, I just love this and I love talking to people. So drop it.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Let's all talk to each other
more.
I will. Thanks for becoming a node, by the way. Thank you.
My pleasure. My honor.